Welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast, the show for anyone wanting to be on the cutting edge of SaaS tech sales. We provide the tools you need to take advantage of the rapidly changing sales environment. We bring you the leading experts on the front lines of SaaS sales and distill down our famous masterclasses into bite-sized practical tips. Your hosts will be Ash Ali and Matt Milligan. And on this podcast, we'll be helping you transform your ability to sell more so you can smash your targets.
Welcome back to another episode of the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast. And it gives me great pleasure today to welcome aboard a guest for the second time on the show. And it's not often that we have had repeat guests in the seat. One of the things that we've covered a lot on this show is the journey of a sales leader. We've also honed in really specifically on the journey of that first senior sales hire. You know, and often the founders will get to Series A, or maybe they'll get the first kind of 10, 20, 30 clients out of a combination of passion and grit. And then they recognize that they need to take their revenue org to the next level. And I've got a lot of admiration for the sales leaders that come in at that stage. It requires a very specific skill set. It requires almost like a founder mentality. And delighted to have on the show today one of those sales leaders themselves. And Clément Le Fan, who is currently leading sales at Phantom Buster. Clément, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Matt. Thanks a lot for having me. Pleasure again to be here. And let's get started.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. We have, you know, a range of sales leaders on the show, as well as enablers. And yeah, most recently, I had Kevin Canarium, the Chief Revenue Officer at Clari, on the show. You know, you think about the scale that they've achieved. I mean, we're going to take it a step back today. We're going to talk a little bit more about the kind of earlier stages of the journey. And a couple of themes that you and I have been discussing around the conversation on today's episode is one, product-led growth. You know, we see a lot of debate in the market at the moment around PLG. It's hot. All of my investors are asking me about it. Everyone in the market is talking about PLG. How to decide, you know, PLG versus sales-led, and what do the differences look like? And, you know, the thing I'm excited about today's conversation, obviously, you've been on both sides. You know, you set up a sales-led approach and you've also now tapped into PLG in your most recent role. For those listening to the show, before we jump into today's topics, if you wouldn't mind, I mean, just refresh us of your journey so far. Like, you know, where have you come from and how did you arrive into your sales leadership career that you're in the midst of now?
Well, I basically started sales because for me, it was the closest thing to sports, like sport and competition, team sport. I've always done that. And that's the type of environment that makes me thrive, the competition. So when I finished my studies and I had to find the first job, I was like, okay, what are my options? And sales seemed like could be the best one to have the same emotion, basically. So that's why I went there. And so I started like, you know, almost everybody out there, right? So being an SDR, making 100 calls a day. Until I got promoted to my first position as an account executive. So I've almost always worked abroad because, well, as you can hear, I'm French, right? But I almost always worked abroad in London and a bit in New York, right? Where I did door-to-door sales, which is really fun. Not every day, but at least you learn resilience and how not to complain when you actually find a new desk job. And now that you can work from home, right? So yeah, I've done several type of sales, like from transactional to enterprise sales, mainly sales-led. But as you said, like in my last company, Phantom Buster, where my position was to start building the team a bit like I did in my last one, we were supposed to add the sales layer on top of a PLG strategy. So switch from complete PLG to what people called SLG or PLS sometimes, which, I mean, in France doesn't sound good at all because PLS in French is how you put someone after they passed out basically on the floor. So everybody like in the company like made fun of me the first time I came up with these three letters. But yeah, so that's where we stand.
It's hilarious. And I guess that goes to show like the regional differences in sales and sales acronyms, right? We've got to be careful about what we use when we're doing business across borders. Can't wait to dive into some of those topics on today's show, Clément. I mean, just for those listening, previous project, as you mentioned, at Pace, that was very much a kind of sales-led motion. And I mean, just talk us through, if you will, the founder there, Jens, you know, that Jens and Jason brought you in as that kind of first senior sales guy to really kickstart the RevOrg. Talk about just like a little bit about that journey, if you will, and how you think about that as like a building a sales-led approach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, as you said, at Base, I was the first sales hired, right? And the structure was a bit different because we had no marketing until a very long time in the journey, right? So it was all outbound. Like most of our deal came from outbound. So we had to find a way to put material and at the top of the funnel, right? So we did the basic way that most companies are doing, like hiring SDR, train them on cold calling, cold emailing, reaching out on LinkedIn, and just like finding list of for ICP and for them to reach out to them. Went pretty well. Base is doing really good at the moment, but it's very different from something that I've experienced at Phantom Buster with the PLG, right? Like in a PLG strategy, sales comes maybe later. The company started with that, and it's maybe not the most important team in revenue at first. But well, I still believe that they can play a very, very important role for the growth of the company.
How do you think about finding PLG per month? I mean, you know, we see it used as an acronym so often, so frequently. Product-led growth, for those who are just getting their heads around this, how would you explain product-led growth to someone coming in totally fresh?
Well, actually, it's fun because I had to explain that to my mother and my father at some point. So I was like, basically, product-led growth company is a company that has a product that's going to be helping most people, right? Like a market supposed to be pretty big, and it's built for the end user. So basically, the end user can see something like an ad online or on social media. If you are like, now my parents are a fan of Facebook, they spend way too much time on it. So I was like, imagine like you're on your Facebook feed, you see an ad for a product, you just go on their website, look at two article, think, okay, could be great. You just create an account and start using it. That's like what the PLG company is supposed to do. Actually, like when I talked to my father about that, we're starting to use this app called Pocket, where you can save all your articles. So like that's a great example of a PLG company. You start with a free version, then you get hooked and you need more. And that's when you want to start paying for the service. So that's the type of company I'm working in right now.
Yeah, and as a Pocket user myself, great products and a great example of something that's just so easy to get started with, create an account and start using. And one of the fascinating parts, I think, of the, you know, the PLG products that we use at U-Hubs, and you know, Pocket's one I use personally, you know, other products like Loom, which I think have just done an unbelievable job of creating that virality within the product as well. You know, if we take Loom as an example, you send a recording to someone, it pops up within the Loom window, and then they can have the option to create their own Loom account. Before you know it, every time someone shares a video, you've got a route to market. I think it's genius. How do you think about that then? You mentioned, obviously, in your previous role at Phantom Buster, you saw yourself as kind of building a sales function on top of an existing PLG approach. We'll come on to talk about the details of that, but is it worth mentioning as well that it seems to be that PLG almost kind of caps out in terms of the total available market that you can service just with PLG alone? And there seems to be this kind of crossroads when the founders wake up and realize, okay, we're actually going to need some salespeople as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very good comment that you have. I don't know if it caps out exactly, but at some point the growth will plateau, or it's not going to grow like exponentially as you want your company to grow. As soon as you want to start targeting your company, they will basically expect to be in contact with someone and not do everything on the website, right? And do everything on their own. So that's when I think you need to start adding a sales team. Two very nice indicators that also I think could be interesting for a PLG company to start realizing when they need to have people, salespeople, is when the conversion between the sign up on their website and purchase is very, very low, but also when the retention is like all the churn level is very high. Because ultimately, if you start, what if you add these salespeople that will identify the right sign up, that have the most potential for your company? Well, they will eventually increase your conversion rate, right? And these people will know how to use the platform, will know what the impact they can get from this platform and stay longer, for sure.
So I think it's the two key indicators you shared there are really valuable ones. So what I'm hearing there is you want to kind of look at conversion in terms of those that have signed up and create an account through to actually using the product. And then you actually want to look at churn, how many are dropping out the other side. I mean, It sounds to some degree then that the role of the salesperson in a PLG model is much more almost like CS.
Yeah. And actually, like, I follow this company called Focus. I don't know if you know about it. Like, they do very good content, like PLG and PLS content. And yeah, they call that sales assisted in a sense, where it's a very different way of selling, where you don't want to push the client too hard. You don't want to sound too salesy. You don't want to put the pressure that you could potentially put in an outbound motion, right? You want to act a bit more like a consultant. It's just these people, they came into your website, sign up on your tool. They are not expecting to talk to anyone, most of them. So you need to be like, okay, like, I'm here to help you and make sure, like, okay, you arrive on my platform to achieve one impact. I'm going to show you how you can get to that impact as soon as possible. And so it's a very, very smooth way of selling. You need to also make sure that you reflect that on the way you you pay these salespeople, because you cannot pay them the same way as, well, outbound A, basically.
Yeah, I can't even begin to imagine. I mean, on that point around compensation, we've got obviously a load of proof points in the market when it comes to more traditional outbound sellers. And, you know, there's templates on Pavilion that you and I can leverage and very easily know if we're offering something that's industry standard. When it comes to PLG, there seems to be a lot fewer proof points. And how the hell do you even begin building a comp plan?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. And to be honest, I had to do a lot of research on that because, well, you cannot just give a commission to your salespeople just based on the first value booking. Otherwise, they're going to push the client to buy more and they might scare these people and they will fly away, right? Basically, the way we've done it in Phantom Buster is that, yes, they get compensated on the first value booking, but they will keep this relationship with this client for at least 3 months after to have the possibility to actually upsell them, to make sure that, well, as soon as they get in touch with the sign up, they just help them as much as they can to achieve the impact. And when these clients actually have seen the impact from the tool, it's much easier for salespeople to come back. Okay, well, you know, we've seen company XY dead. That in the same industry as you, they also use our solution for this use case and this use case. Like, do you want me to show you how it works? And then it makes the upgrade much easier. Actually, I was listening to a webinar from Mark Robert, who was talking about that. What he was saying is that he actually gives a higher percentage of commission on the second sale. So the salespeople will actually close the first value booking will be way smaller than usual to make sure the salespeople don't oversell. And on the second one, they would get maybe 3% more or something like this. So yeah, that you really need to make sure, like, the salespeople understand that they shouldn't be pushy and sales, which is very contradictory in the sales mentality.
Some great advice in there. And as we all know, as revenue leaders, the compensation dictates the incentives and the behavior of the team. So I think that's a really interesting point around incentivizing the second purchase more so than the first. How does this then translate, Clement, in terms of how you think about building the team? I mean, just contrast for us, if you will, the difference between obviously building the outbound team at pace, where you were looking for, you know, hungry SDRs to come in and promote up, to the types of characteristics and competencies you were looking for in the sellers that you've hired at pace.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, some of the characteristics are still the same, right? Of course, that you need. Well, you want people that are, of course, coachable, that highly motivated, very resilient, because still sales, right? They're going to have to face a lot of rejection. But I mean, one of the main difference for people that I've been hiring at Phantom Buster is that they basically have very, very good listener. And they know exactly what type of question to ask. Like, they impressed me during the interviews, to be honest, like in the role play, how they were just, well, really trying to understand what the client, being me, in the role play was needed and wouldn't try to oversell anything, just saying, okay, so to do that, like, blah, 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 you need to do X, Y, Z. Okay, and now if I manage to help you to achieve this impact, like, how would that sound? And that's something that you really need. Like, you almost need consultant, right? I mean, as you said, really sounds like a CS role, and like CS people that act as consultants on your tool. So you need people that will be in that mindset with an appetite for sales to make sure they stay motivated with a target every month.
How does that then translate into the way that you onboard them? I mean, if that consultative approach requires very good level of product knowledge, is that something that you focused a lot of time on with the new hires?
Yeah, of course. I mean, well, to give you an idea, in the onboarding path at Phantom Buster, so it's pretty long, 3 weeks and a half, something like this. They go through different departments, but they spend 3 days learning about sales at Phantom Buster, but they spend the same amount of time with the product team to try to learn everything, with the CS team to try to learn about our clients, the main objection they receive, and yeah, the type of use case our clients are doing. And one thing we've realized that they need to start spending time with the engineering team to really understand how the product is created, like how client can connect to the API so they can handle all these very technical questions too. So that's something like we need to add in the onboarding on top of that. It's very different from last experience at Space, right? Because ultimately, once the sale was done, everything would go to the CS team and the CS guy would know everything about the product, about tech. And salespeople didn't, was not really worth their time to know exactly everything about the tool.
So you're hiring for a slightly different competency set with product-led sales within a POG environment. You're looking for good listeners, people who can learn quickly, super coachable, but can ask the right questions at the right time. You're then spending a lot of time building up their skill set and product knowledge base so they can be consultative and have a deep understanding of how to support clients as they get more value from the tool. How do you then think about, you mentioned it there, the alignment with CS. I mean, where do you draw the lines? Because obviously you've got your team coming in, trying to hit their targets and then their commissions based on, you know, number of initial sales. Where is the handoff between CS and how do you think about that alignment?
So basically, as soon as someone purchases, basically the CS person will get involved to do kickoff call, right, and start implementing. But on the commercial side of it, the salesperson will keep the relationship for at least the first 3 months. And then what we are trying to build, because we didn't have time to do it with Phantom Buster, is to add an account management team that would again keep the relationship for the longer term with the clients, ensure renewals, et cetera, et cetera.
Got it. And then whose responsibility in terms of those additional sales? Where does that sit? Are they then incentivized to focus on those upsells?
Not really. The goal is for the salesperson to be incentivized on that for the first 3 months again. And then, well, at the moment, it's a CS person that's doing that at Phantom Buster because we don't have an account management team. The goal would be either for this person to become an account manager and have some other people doing CS, or hire account managers, because ultimately you don't want a person doing both roles, right? It can be tricky sometimes.
Makes a lot of sense. I think there's some really great learnings there. I mean, as you'd summarize the journey that you've been on, sales-led versus PLG, come on. Is there anything that you wish you kind of knew heading into the PLG experience that you've had recently? And, you know, any advice you'd kind of give yourself 12 months ago?
Yeah, how important it is to know who you want to sell to, right? Because a PLG company, you arrive there, you're like, wow, we have more than 30,000 sign up every month. That's amazing. All these leads, like, wow, I've never had that many, right? But ultimately, you very quickly realize that most of them, obviously, I'm not worth contacting. It's just like bots creating account, fake accounts, something like this. So I would be way more granular on the definition of your ICP. But also try to really understand what behaviors on your platform actually shows that this buyer is interested. Because ultimately, this is going to be key in your sales strategy for a PLG company to make sure you reach out to the right person at the right time, right? Because that's the trigger event that you're looking at. They are much easier to discover in a PLG company than in an outbound motion where you're just like saying, okay, like, if they raise Series A, they might be thinking about implementing this platform, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, well, they've actually used these two features in our platform. We know exactly what it means.
So it sounds like your approach to defining that ICP was quite feature-led in terms of you looked at the kind of triggers within the platform and then you based your focus around that. Was that right?
Well, we first did a very typical ICP definition, right, with the persona. And that's when I think that we should have thought a bit more. And once we had like the type of profile of client we're looking for, but also adds all these feature that would show us that they actually want to buy. That's a discussion we should have had a bit earlier.
I mean, we're guilty even in outbound sales of selling to people that we shouldn't be selling to, right?
Yeah.
let alone in a PLG environment where you've got 30,000 new signups coming in. And I'd imagine that it's really easy to get lost in that.
Oh yeah, very quickly. And it can be very frustrating for your sales team, right? Yeah, when the first person starting to shoot email to our signup that were supposed to be qualified, most of them were just answering back, okay, like I just want to delete my account. How do I do that? And it's just because we're not focusing enough on feature, right? And it's just people that would create an account because they've seen the platform, like, okay, looks cool, and then they don't want to use it. So you don't want your salespeople to lose their time on this type of signups, of course.
How did you actually go about that process of defining that ICP? You mentioned you did the traditional way first, but then how did you get down to that definition of, okay, X happens within the product, that's who we go after?
Well, the good thing is that, well, now there is a tech solution for everything, right? So of course, there are several tech companies that do that. So mentioned Pocus earlier, but we sat down with the data analyst in a company and the head of marketing, and we looked at Pocus, Correlated, and Matkudu, which are three companies that do that. And we ended up going and working with Matkudu because they were actually going to, well, their software is based in a way that, yes, you need to have your profile for company that you're going to put in their model. So they're going to give a score for your company based on their profile, but also they have an AI that's going to analyze all your historical data for the usage-based data from your sign-up. And they are going to, well, they told us basically, when XY that is done, the client's going to buy. And so based on this model, they're going to give another score to every sign-up. And so basically then it works like a normal lead scoring strategy. And that's how we've been able to identify the most valuable signups.
Amazing. So it's almost like you've got a lead scoring capability like you would in a CRM with an outbound model, but it's automated and it's using all of your product analytics to give you that lead score and tell you where to focus your efforts.
Exactly. The thing they add is just that they are going to look at usage-based data. And in a PLG and company, it's super, super important. I would rather contact someone who is not an ICP properly, say, but who's actually very involved in the platform than someone that's an ICP but don't do anything.
Beautiful. It sounds like a great solution. On that topic of qualification, Clement, let's talk sales process, because coming in as, you know, the first sales leader into a role, quite often the company's still so early that, you know, the founders have been selling something that definitely isn't a process. How do you think about sales process, firstly, for early stage businesses? And I'd love to come on and talk about how you thought about that in a PLG context as well.
Yeah, well, to be completely honest with you, it was easier to put it in an outbound motion because I had more experience with that. So we went for like cold call, discovery call, demo, closing, and done. But in Phantom Buster, it was a bit different because, of course, you cannot do that. You can't really take all that time. And you don't want to be like a full demo or something like this. So we've tried to do it in just one call, like a longer discovery, if I could say, where like the salesperson would spend 10, 15 minutes at the beginning of the call really to understand, well, what situation, problem, and impact that the client is trying to achieve. Briefly or very quickly show how they could achieve that on Phantom Buster, on the platform, right? Without even like installing or just like mentioning the different feature, without actually like doing it. And then trying to understand, okay, so, well, the decision process, and that's it. So that worked for, well, not for the most sophisticated client that we had. For the most sophisticated client, we had to add also like somewhat of a peer POV, where people will ask us for, well, some result, and we would do it on our own, and then organize another call to show them the results. And then finally, another call to discuss with more people in the company to agree on the bigger deal. But yeah, usually when you go through that, you have a much bigger deal at the end. So yeah, that's something we were not completely ready for at the beginning. But that's how you realize that actually, yeah, you need to have several sales processes based on the type of client you're addressing, even in a PLG company.
Yeah, additional elements of complexity there. And then I guess closely aligned to sales processes then, you know, how do you think about rolling out a sales methodology, both from, you know, sales-led and PLG projects you've worked on?
Yeah, I really like Spice. I understand that it's simple, but at the same time, it gives you all the information you need, right? But on an outbound motion, I always struggle to get my team to find the critical events. And what I love in a PLG motion is that, well, you have your critical event already. you know exactly what's happening. So that's why, like, for me, it was pretty straightforward to start implementing that in the company. And also, I think this helps a lot to align with customer success. So even for them, they also like use Spice to know exactly everything about our client. And when they have to do the kickoff call, now it's super easy for them. They already know all the information. They don't have to ask again for what CRM the client is using or how many people is going to using. Good. They have everything.
Super interesting. And go back to your point around finding that critical event. I mean, it's the hardest thing in sales, right? So how the hell do you create urgency? How do you create that critical event that's got to push the client to force action? I guess the beauty of PLG is, as you say, that's kind of taking care for you. Any kind of coaching tips for sales leaders listening to this that have worked for you in terms of like helping your teams drive urgency and do better discovery to get to that critical event?
Well, to be completely honest, at Phantom Buster, we haven't really worked on it because basically we know the information from Matt Kudu, and then once the team discovered the pain and they just asked them, okay, it's like, well, when do you need the rest for, right? And that's pretty much it. But yeah, like we had to pay in an outbound motion, it was a bit more difficult to find them. And yeah, we had to talk way more to our customer success people because they know the client much more than we do in sales. And actually they had some examples of critical events from our ICP. And that's how we learned from it.
Amazing. Clement, I've got so much value from our conversation so far today. And I think there's so many great lessons in there, particularly for any sales leaders who are looking at taking on a first senior sales role in a PLG company and figuring out how you build out this PLS, product-led sales motion. I mean, just to wrap up and close, for those who would like to connect with you, ask additional questions and pick your brains about the journey that you've been on, you know, where's the best place for them to do that?
Or LinkedIn, definitely. I'm lucky enough that we are only 8 people in France with the same last name as I have. So just type Clément on LinkedIn and you'll find me straight away.
Clément, really enjoyed the conversation today. And thanks so much for sharing your experiences and building out sales teams and continuing to do the work that you do. And I know many of our listeners out there listening to this, both IC and Leader, will, you know, look up to the journey that you're living. So thank you for sharing so generously.
Well, thanks for having me, Matt. It's my pleasure.
By uncovering blind spots on performance, motivation, and skills, UHubs helps busy sales leaders at top SaaS companies to optimize their sales enablements so that they can develop reps and grow revenue. The UHubs Pulse platform visualizes each team's development needs, personalized upskilling, and provides data-driven coaching recommendations. These save sales managers 40 plus hours per quarter and help reps to ramp up 30% faster. Supercharge your sales team by booking a demo today.